This is Cindy Gomez-Shemp with 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, coming to you with another important update from the Sacred Stone Camp at Standing Rock Sioux Reservation.
Hi, everybody. Candy Mossett with the Indigenous Environmental Network. I am here at the Achitti Shikoni Camp, and I wanted to give everybody an update as to what's been happening on the ground ever since the judge's decision that was made October 9th on Sunday. So today is Thursday, October 12th, and what I'm being told by Myron and Dean and other people that have been going out is that they are working really fast within the 20-mile zone, even though the Department of Interior, Department of Justice, and Department of Army put out a statement to request voluntary work to stop, they haven't stopped. They are on the other side now, the east side of Highway 6. They are working as fast as they can to get over to 1806. Some people estimate that they're going to be to 1806 within the next day and a half, and that we're going to need to do something big to stop them. Because it's just a voluntary request, they are continuing to work. What's going on is that we have been hearing that the police are pressuring the Army Corps of Engineers, who are in turn pressuring the Tribal Council to talk about what we're going to do about this camp. There has been a rumor about them coming in to the camp and removing us. Yes, dear? Okay, I will hold you. So you might have seen a call out that went out by Mark Tilson Jr. asking people to come out and stand with Standing Rock here on October 17th. We may need you even earlier. It's crazy. Ever since the work order on October 9th, they've just been hauling butt, moving as fast as they can as a company out here, doing what they can to get the pipeline in the ground. And we're here trying our best, but the police have ramped up the militarized style. We've been officially called rioters now, which we are not. We are still unarmed. We're still here with our kids. We've still been going out, just doing what we can as water protectors to try and protect the water. But as you can imagine, we're up against a lot here. And so though we've had a lot of success stories come out of here, right now they're building and they're coming to where the camp is. And so I wanted to show you right here where the camp is. Let me turn this around. This is 1806, this road right here. So the camp, Ochetti Shokhoi Camp, is just off of 1806. The pipeline is up north, the direction I'm pointing the camera. So, that's a little bit too blurry. But up that direction, you can kind of see the towers up there where the wires run. That's kind of where the pipeline is running, up by those towers. So that's the front line up there. And we're down here in the camp. But more and more police have been driving by in 1806. We had some unauthorized police that just the other day were sitting on the reservation. And they said, we didn't know we were on the reservation. And so the local council had to go out there. I think it was Dana, and told those police they had no business being out there. You can see the moon out here tonight. It's a really pretty time out here. But we are preparing for winter camp. Right now I'm pointing in a south direction. That's the Cannonball River over there. The Cannonball runs all along. We're on a floodplain here. And in the background, way back there, that body of water is the Missouri River that you can see. And this is the camp. And then as I go and as I turn here, I'm starting to turn to the north. And you can see the road again over there, 1806. And so we're just having a hard time here with all of the cops that are coming in, with all of the arrests that are being made. We continue to ask for prayers. We continue to let you know that they are not stopping construction. The voluntary order is doing nothing. The company, Dakota Access Energy Transfer Partners, are not stopping work at all whatsoever. We've got our people with their eye in the sky, which is really awesome and amazing. The IEN drone, the brand new, brand spanking new state-of-the-art IEN drone was confiscated. by the police. So the drone is in police custody, I guess you could say, and is being held hostage, and we probably won't get it back. So Myron went on his page and asked to help fundraise for a new drone. That would be great because we're really sad that our brand new drone was taken away from us. And I was looking for Johnny here. Johnny could help give another winter camp update. But basically on Sunday, this coming Sunday, we will have a better update on winter camp and what might be happening with the possibility of the camp moving. Some of the camp, we're trying... What we're worried about is that they're going to storm in here and make us move. They might give a 24-hour notice. They might give a 48-hour notice using the premise that this is Corps land. This camp here behind me, this is Army Corps of Engineers land. Even though it's treaty land, it's Army Corps land. And so if we were just 1 mile over on the reservation, they couldn't storm in and they couldn't tell us to leave. So there's been some talk around putting the permanent structures, the earth lodges, the school, a longhouse for the school. There's been talk about putting that on the reservation boundary so that the police can't storm in and force us to move. And also, it is getting cold, and so we need to make sure that our babies stay warm. She's falling. Ugh. You can about imagine how crazy it is being out here with a three-year-old, and it's October. But all the little kids are gearing up for Halloween. It's still, they're talking about dressing up as the things we're trying to protect. So the little kids are going to do a Halloween out here and go trick-or-treating to teepees and stuff dressed as animals and different trees and plants. I thought it was a really cute idea. It's kind of following the premise of how we did the little mini powwow the other day. But I just wanted to give you guys an update and let you know that we really need the prayers and we really need donations to keep coming in to build the Earth Lodges. Dakota Access Energy Transfer Partners is building. They are now over Highway 6. The pipe is underneath Highway 6, is on the east side of Highway 6 where you saw the action the other day. They've moved on. Some people are saying it'll be a day and a half that they'll be over to 1806 where we are. They still do not have the Army Corps of Engineers permit to bore underneath the Missouri River. And we're praying to God, we're praying to the Creator, we're praying to the Army Corps of Engineers that they do not allow that permit to go through. And we are asking for a full environmental impact statement. Please, if you're watching this, write to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, demand that an environmental impact statement on Energy Transfer Partners and Dakota Access Pipeline be made. Please call the Morton County Sheriff's Department and tell them to stop militarizing the police against innocent men, women, and children. Militarization against Native Americans that are protecting water rights for more than 18 million people. We are not violent. We are not armed. We are here to protect our future generations, and we need your help. We need you to stand with Standing Rock. If the camp is here, if the camp is on the reservation, wherever it is, we're going to be here throughout the winter, and we're going to need some major people holding the line, putting our bodies on the line as this company, this ruthless, evil company, continues to come forward at all costs. So thank you so much, everybody. Matzah Gidadz, I'm going to sign out for now. When I do have another update, I will bring that to you live. And I'm going to go, and my daughter and I are going to go eat some supper right now. Daddy, if you're watching, hi, we miss you. Hello, family, friends, and relatives. We're okay. We're fine. We're hanging in there. We miss you. We love you guys. And I'll see you back again here soon. Thank you.
On Friday, October 7th, from 6 to 8 p.m., the Unitarian Universalist Church of Bismarck Mandan held a teach-in featuring speakers Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth, Candy Mossett of the Indigenous Environmental Network, and Lila Spoonhunter of the International Indigenous Youth Council regarding the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Here is Walter and Lisa DeVille's presentation at the event.
I want to bring up a good friend of mine who has been living in the community of Mandaree. Man, the things that have been happening and the violations that have been happening on the reservation are insane. I only told you a couple, but I want to want to bring up Lisa DeVille and Walter. Both Walter and Lisa DeVille, come on down. You are the next. Yeah. I watch too much Price is Right sometimes. I haven't seen TV in a long time though. So Walter and Lisa here are from Mandarin and
Maria,
her daughter. And so they're going to tell you a little bit more about some of the things that they've been working on, some of the studies that have been done. Because you guys, if anyone lives here in Bismarck and drinks this water, you seriously need to be worried. With the radiation levels, we're really probably going to start to see some cancers in about 20 years, bone cancers. We have to be worried. So, Lisa?
Thank you, Candy. Like Candy said, my name is Lisa DeVille, and I don't even know where to start. It's been a challenge for us to educate people on what's happening to us. I could start off with back in 2010, my friend invited me to her house to look at some yellow snow around her house, and she had no idea where the snow was coming from. So as soon as I got there, I could see the huge flare in there, and I'm like, where's this coming from? So all I could think of was just the flare. And so I started asking questions. Where is it coming from? It's everywhere everything that goes in there has to land somewhere. Those were my questions. I asked Homeland Security, I asked the Environmental Department, I asked the consul, I asked everybody, and nobody knew. So I became concerned. This is just the beginning. We just started becoming oil extracted, and then oil and gas extracted. So I then thought to myself, how can I, the advocacy that I want to do. Mother Earth has always been important to me, and that's what I was raised from my grandmother, who told me that, the Earth provides for us, protect it, water's life, water's sacred, everything that the elders told us back then. So, and she used to always tell me, this, our creation stories come from the Earth. What else? My advocacy began when I went to talk to Dr. Hartman over at the college, and he said, well, if you want to start doing this, you should really get your environmental science degree. So I have two master's degrees, but I went back for environmental science because I was very concerned. So all of our work's been volunteer. I'm getting hot. All of our work's been volunteer. We haven't asked any help from anybody. And I'm thankful for Candy and then Indigenous Environmental Network for taking us places where, like, it's been eye-opening to everything that's happening around us, all the way from Louisiana, all over. And it's just, get to that, to learn that experience and even see it. So as we began our advocacy, I started looking at public comment periods. Our tribe don't provide public comment periods to us, and neither they make decisions on their own. Just the seven consul that are up there, they never bring it to the people, ask for, what do you think about this? What do you think, how do you feel about gas or how do you feel about radioactive waste? How do you feel about, all this oil and gas impact? They don't come to us. So usually we work with Joletta, with Dakota Resource Council. It's been great. And I sit on the board with Dakota Resource Council, and also Western Organization Resource Council. I sit on that board also. So, and then we created Fort Bertha Power because of the fact we want people to unite and, try our best to protect what we have. Our land's been all mortgaged out. When our elders were told about this oil and gas, they were told that, I'm getting hot. They were told that, weren't educated on the impact of the environment. They were more of, you sign this, and you're on no more worries ever again. Am I too close? And that's what they were telling as soon as our elders would sign, because we had back then in 2010, there was still a lot of elders alive to see, to sign those leases. But then back then, the people that they would collect 2% of those royalties. And so I'll give you, for instance, Tex Hall, who was with Peak, was going door to door, and my grandmother was one of them, and she was to get 18% of royalties. Which 18% of that, Tex Hall will get 2% of it. But he was also the one saying that how they would have no more worries. And so they signed without not knowing of what was to be today. Okay. So as time goes on, I'm asking all these questions. Why aren't you educating our people? Why don't we have a new Boys and Girls Club? Our children have nowhere to go. We're the biggest oil-producing community, Mandaree. And we don't have anything. We have nothing here. We really have a 24-hour healthcare provider. I mean, all these things that our town needs. But yet, everybody wants our oil money. You know, and it was very frustrating when there's a better way to handle all of this. And that's, we have no monitoring, we have no research, we have no studies. You know, everything that's happening to us, and everyone turns away. Just recently, we had an election, and we ran on monitoring and more studies and getting holding industry accountable for their contamination. So what happened was, instead, our people turned away and were promised all this money, and they voted for the other person that was allowing industry to do this to us. So we're still sitting there wondering, it's been very frustrating. It was very heartbreaking because we thought our people really wanted change. So through all this, we went and we advocated in Washington, D.C. on gas flaring, venting with Dakota Resource Council and Earthworks. And work took us there. We went twice there. We've done a lot of public comments on radioactive waste, you know, like I said, in radioactive waste, pipelines, grasslands. I even advocated on grasslands because grasslands, the Missouri grasslands, we're putting a pipeline through there, which is going to destroy a lot of the homes where the birds are and grasses and all that, which we as Native Americans rely on still for our medicines and all that. So it's divided our people. Our people are sick, and it's the greed that has made our people sick. And so, like I said, not everybody's for the pipelines. Not everybody's for oil and gas. And like Candy said, I had a family. We took a petition to save our post office, and that's how we became very concerned for our people, because they had many questions about the dust and all that from the truck traffic. And why their cattle has to eat this grass and it's grinding their teeth down. I mean, you name it, all these things were happening. And I had my relatives, I'm a Finley, my main name is Lisa Finley. And so I had a family of five, who my first cousin Jody Finley's daughter got killed by a truck driver who fell asleep at the wheel. And her whole family got killed. And that was right on 22 there. That was one of the reasons why I fought for the post office in Mandaree. I didn't want my elders driving on that road because they could only drive 45 miles per hour. And then they have to put their lives at risk, you know. We fought against the oil-filled trash. I mean, trash was terrible there. It was all over the place. We had no gas in our gas station for about, 3 years, and we fought for that. Because we had to go all the way 30 miles each way to go get gas. And it's crazy. It's a sad deal, and we're still the same. We have, our infrastructure is capacitated water and sewer. I mean, you know, we have 30 units. Like I said, we're the richest community on reservation, but still we sit there with our low-income housing units not renovated. So, you know, they have no plan. They're not planning. They're just spending. I mean, we spent millions of dollars on powwows this year. And we've helped every powwow. One contest was $10,000. For a dance contest.
Maybe we should start giving away houses.
They have been giving away houses. That's what a lot of this election was promised on this last one. But then, I mean, you name it. You mean Crow, I don't mean to offend anybody, but this is Crow, even Gathering of the Nations, Denver March, all them, and even United Tribes, 200,000, whatever. Now I think Crow's getting a brand new arbor now. That is where our representative lived before, so. But I mean, this is the reality of this greed. I mean, you know, now everyone, we're losing our way. In Mandaree, my son was the only one that graduated from Mandaree. 2015, our son, he's the only one that graduated. And so as I'm going parent-teachers conference, so why is it our children are all not coming to school? You know, we only have one senior, you know? And so they say they have oil money, so now they don't have to be in school. So that's one of the things. I believe in junior achievement. I said I believe in why are we not structuring that leadership having them understand this oil is not forever, you know, teaching them financial, you know, those management, all these things, homeownership. Because one day, I said, this is, if you don't receive education, and I was telling my kids this, what kind of legacy are you going to leave? Are you going to say, well, I'm sorry I took the money, I'm sorry you don't have, and today you don't have clean water? You know, these are the things that I always tell my kids. And my daughter, the modern day warriors that Candy had talked about, I became their, I am a mentor to them, because when they rallied, we put when they rallied against Kakumi Pipeline, that's when we did the horse ride and the walk. But then, like Candy said, I'm kind of jumping all over, but sorry, I got so much to say to you guys. But in May, they went in and I told them, I said, they said, we're going to do a survey. Well, that's good. Make it simple, though, I said. Three questions, and just simply ask, was, did the tribal council come and ask you how you felt about the pipelines? You know, there's three simple questions. My daughter did Mandarin. Zaysha Grinnell was actually the lead on the Skokomi pipeline, and she did the Newtown area. And so they've got about 100, 150, and they did college students, and they did Mandarin in the Newtown High School, I think, like, or Garrison, anyway, or Weishel. So here, we went in there, and I had the Denton report. I didn't get to that. But the Denton report we took, that is a contamination report that was directed to me from DRC. They asked if we could take them down to a 1 million gallon brine spill that happened by in Mandarin. And so we've been advocating on that, on the brine spills, and on the legal spills, sorry, I'm jumping all over, but let me get back to the modern day words. So as we went in, they handed over the survey, and Zaysha got up top, and another boy that really took me by, that was really like, oh my gosh, you know, he talked so, like, he was so wise, you know, you're drilling holes in Mother Earth, you're killing her, you know. And so this was told to the council. And so I was aware of like three pipelines. I wasn't aware we had seven pipelines waiting for easements to be signed. So the Skokomi pipeline, all those were presented, and then that survey was presented, and the one girl, she talked about it and how they never came and asked us. We never came and asked us. And so as they all got done talking, then I had to go to Denton report. I said, no cleanup has been done back there. The salinity,
all the contaminations,
everything is there. And the earth is dying. Nobody has cleaned this area. Crestwood has not been held accountable, nor are you guys, there's no environmental law at all or justice that they've done to Crestwood. Instead, they took $1 million check this past July. Took $1 million check from Crestwood, Mandarin representative, and goes and they give him a head start. We're going to build your kids a brand new head start. And he accepts it. And so what was told was, we have to take what's given, is what he said. No cleanup still. So what? $1 million for every gallon brine spill you did, you know? And so that was the challenge that we have today, is getting them to sign a resolution now. Is getting them to sign a resolution now. Okay, get it? I'm told you I have lots to say. So, okay, I'll quit here. But to get that, I'm going to talk about the resolution that has not been signed, but they went and were sued by Paradigm because they tried to do a cease and desist, what you call it. So what happened was Paradigm won, and they're going to do that Skokomi pipeline. Now, they built the Skokomi pipeline all the way up to the lake. They're going to be going under the lake. So Paradigm won. So they are allowed to drill to go under our lake. This was just recent. So we're dealing with pipelines, we're dealing with gas flaring, like I said, we're dealing with a lot of the environmental impact, the health impact, and the increase on drugs. We had 38 meth babies born. So the increase of all that, and in Mandarin, I mean, it's really, really easy now that with drugs could just come in. I mean, you know, people are really have the money, and they know it. So with that, I have more to say, but I'm going to quit. I'm going to bring my husband up, Walter DeVille, and have him say something. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, touch base on a lot of things there with what Lisa said, you know, and Candy. Today, you know, we're dealing with a vicious lion, is what I call it. And I just want to thank every single one of the people, including all of you that are at the script camp. I went down there about 3 or 4 times. I did, I and my family, we donated to the spirit camp there and sat and with the people. And it's very overwhelming to see the people from every nation come together. And it really touches me that, you know, that it comes. It really comes with what I see on YouTube and what I see on television. The white man, they don't care. They don't care about us. You know, we sign treaties. Treaties after treaties after treaties. Those don't mean nothing. Today we're fighting to save our land, to save your land. People act like, you know, we're hypocrites. People of our brother, we're hypocrites. Because we're fighting. That's what they call us, hypocrites. We receive oil and gas, yes. But we were never told that this was going to happen to us in our community and our reservation. And I'm really sorry, you know, that I say the word white man, but that's the truth there. Myself, I have nothing against the white man, but the matter is that today we're still fighting, you guys. 200 years. I say that time and time again to every non-native that I speak to. We've been fighting your government for 200 plus years. When is it going to stop? When is it going to become our home, our homeland? The reason why I and my family, my wife, and a group of people, a small group of people fight, because this is all we have. We ain't going to move. We can't afford to move. You know, I've been to Louisiana. I've been to Gulfport, Mississippi. I visit with people from there. Fighting industry for 20 years. 20 plus years. Excuse me. These people are all different color, all different races, whatnot. They're all together. Fighting. I thought we're the only one fighting up here in North Dakota. Come to find out, you got people in Wyoming, you got people in Utah, you got people in New Mexico, Arizona, you got Montana, you got Wyoming, you name it, people are fighting industry just to keep their home, just to keep their land. They're being forced, eminent domain. That's what's happening in our reservation. Eminent domain, the United States government owns us. That's exactly what it means, that they own us. Myself, you know, I thank the people that are standing day in and day out over there at the Sacred Stone Camp. I thank you guys from the bottom of my heart. But, you know, listen with these people in other states, Louisiana in particular, you know. I visit with this black man. My wife, she sits on the NAJAC committee. Acronym. I have no idea what
it's. National Environmental Justice Advisory Council.
She can say it better than I could. But this elderly gentleman, 73 years old, him and his wife was 63 years old, went up to the NAJAC committee. My wife sits there and addressed the NAJAC committee there. His wife got there and just started crying, you know. explain it to the board. I'm here to ask you for help. For your help. In every way possible that you can and will be able to help me if you can. And I didn't quite understand what they were talking about, but when they got done with the story here, she just walked away. She said, I know you guys can't help me, but I'm just here to address you guys. But her husband explained what was going on. Industry came into this black community and said that we're willing to buy your property for $100,000. Lease your property, not buy. Lease. I don't know how many people exist in that community, but it must have been a lot, because it was given back to them back in the slave trade days. And this elderly gentleman, he sat there and, you know, he was kind of humorous when him and his wife first got up there. Him and his he kind of got up and he said, "Excuse me, Madam Chairman," but he said, Can I approach the bench with my wife?" He said, "I can't live without her," he said. I thought, But getting back to my story, that this elderly gentleman when stated that industry came in there and was going to give him $100,000, people said that wasn't good enough. And on top of that, they said, "We're going to give you guys $75,000. People said, "You know, geez, that's a hell of an offer, you guys, you know. You should take it." Industry came back to them again. "We're going to give you $25,000 plus $1,000. People were like, you know, going out of their minds. "That's almost $200,000, they said. Some people took it because they had the opportunity to move, because they inherited a piece of property, a home, somewhere else. And basically, they turned around and were forced to move out of there after everything was said and done. The industry came back in there. They had an assumption that they were going to be able to stay there, is what my story is. They were on the assumption they were going to get to stay there. The industry said, "No, you guys have to move." So every single one of those families had to move out of that community. Industry owned it. But this man's story, this elderly gentleman's story, it hit me. We had to deal with the same thing back in the 50s, back in the 40s, excuse me, with this Garrison Dam, this water that we're fighting for right now. My ancestors were forced to move out of their bottom land, where they were independent, self-sufficient, hospital, school, education. They were a dwelling community, and they were forced to move. Today, you know, we're segregated in our reservation. We're segregated so much that it's unbelievable. And I'm really sorry to be emotional, but it's hard. It's really hard. And I think about my daughter, my grandkids, my sons, my nieces, my nephews, my extended family. I think about them every day. You know, we were better off in the report. You know that? We were. We're better off when we're poor. Mm-hmm. That's when we helped each other.
Uh-huh.
We picked each other up. Our elders, you know, we were able to depend on them. But today, they're lost. They're really lost. Candy's story, you know, with her friend, Cassie, you know. I knew her dad. And it's really hard. It's really hard to even imagine to lose my daughter, my son. My daughter's just becoming a driver, you know. And I worry about my wife still going up and down the road, going to school, you know. But you know, visiting with these people in other nations, other communities, you know, I just can't believe, you know, that our government, our the U.S. government even allows these, allows industry to even do this to people. It's inhumane. It is very inhumane. It's just like throwing you to a lion and letting them, you know, devour you for nothing. That's what's happening. I never knew Winona. Winona LaDuke. I never knew her. Lisa, introduced me to her. For all her hard work and advocacy and the struggle she has to go through. And she's fighting, you know. She's been fighting a bigger line, you know, her whole life. Yeah. I drove here 90 miles an hour to get here today, you know. 120 miles, but I want to thank you all for it. We're coming here tonight and letting us share our story and share our heartache and don't ever give up, I guess it was when I was told. But it's hard, you know. Like I was telling my wife, and I said, we stand up at the podium, I said, well, we're standing by ourselves. But I just want to thank you guys for hearing me sob. But, you know, I will continue on fighting with my wife, not physically fighting. We're not really fighting, you know. And I want to thank you guys, you know, for doing what you're doing. And thank you guys, bottom of my heart. And, yeah. Well, thank you.
My name is Cindy Gomez-Shemp. I'm with KPPPLP 88.1 FM, Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. And I am here at the UU Church in Bismarck with Candy Mossett. Thank you for giving me this interview, Candy.
Hi, thank you. It's really good to be here. We are here. I'm here with my daughter. She's 3. She likes to play, so you might hear her in the background. But I'll go ahead and introduce myself in my Hiraadza language. So, dosha maragot marashima a ishuia hets. And I just said hello, relatives. My name is Eagle Woman. My English name is Candy Mossett, and I am Menda and Hiraadza Rikara from what is today known as the Fort Berthold Reservation. And I grew up in a little tiny town called Newtown, North Dakota. So, born and raised here in this lovely state.
And you are with the Indigenous Environmental Network. And you've been reporting a lot of what's been going on at Standing Rock. You've been reporting a lot of the actions of the water defenders. I just saw a quite terrifying video recently of an action that just took place a couple of days. And you had your little baby there with you. Can you relay what that's been like, the escalation that we've been seeing from the Morton County Sheriff's Department, including the latest announcement that they made a couple of days ago after the sheriff was refused any more federal funding to help with the police effort, where we see MRAPs and helicopters and loaded guns, where there are hundreds of water defenders, elderly women, children, babies. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what that's been like for you being there on the front line with your children and with your people? And what do you think of this escalation?
Being there on the front lines is something that is a constant struggle every day. Do I get up and go this morning? Do I get up and take my daughter Ayana with me today? What's it going to be like? Because it is scary. The escalation is scary. But then when we get there and we arrive and there's all of us just standing with our sage and our sweet grass and our flags and our cameras, I see other kids out there. I see my daughter's 3 and I've seen smaller ones out there. And so I think that it actually adds to the whole narrative around doing this in prayer and ceremony and for the children. I've even had people ask me, why would you bring your child out there? And it's kind of like people have a hard time wrapping their mind around what we're doing, which is for the children. They are a part of this. They're not separate from it. And I think that the police seeing that has actually caused them to second guess or question what they're doing there. And we've had some police that, you know, have actually, you know, shake their hands and, you know, flashed a peace sign. I think it takes a lot of courage for a police officer to do that when a lot of their other superiors and other people are not. They're just not engaging with us at all, especially the riot police. And so I think it's important to have children and youth because that is the very essence of what we're fighting for to protect, is that so that when they're our age, that they don't have to go out on a protest and go up against militarized police. But yeah, I mean, I'm torn as a mother every day, but I'm here. This is what I do with the Indigenous Environmental Network. My official title is Extreme Energy and Just Transition Coordinator. And so how do we create a just transition away from the fossil fuel industry in the face of such extreme energy extraction? And to be perfectly honest with you, I was driving away from that action. I was with my coworker, Dallas Goldtooth, and my daughter was sitting in the back seat, and all by herself, without any prompts from anybody, she started saying, "Water is life. Water is life." And she said, "Water is life. Protect. Water is life. Protect." So I had a moment, like I had a really proud mom moment, because even though she's only 3, she gets it. And that's something that she'll carry with her by being here and being a part of this historic moment. How could I deny that? I would like to have, you know, her dad has his full-time regular job, which is not here. So he's here every weekend, but I'm with her. I've been with her since August 15th out in Standing Rock at the camp. And
is that true? You said water is life? Yeah?
Can you say it again? And you say, "Water is life."
I think I made her shy.
She's very shy.
But she was sharing her Oreos with me earlier, so.
They're fake Oreos, by the way. I do not give her real Oreos.
But yeah, these are toy Oreos. But I also wanted to ask you about the... Well, I'm going to insert my biased opinion here. I am a paralegal, so, but I've noticed that it's not just the police and the way that they're dressed and the kind of gear that they're showing up with. It's the actions that have been taken against the water defenders. The arrest recently of Gray Cloud, the way that he was held, the now new charges that are being brought against Happy, the arrest of, I can't remember his first name. Is it Red Wing or Red Cloud? The horseman that was just Red Wing, yes, that was just arrested. All of us that have been watching those videos, I'm baffled about the felony endangerment, like the started with trespassing and now we're at felony endangerment and people are talking about what the water defenders are doing in the law enforcement community as threatening the life of the police officers. Can you talk about what's really happening And what do you make of that kind of response from them?
So first of all, North Dakota has a long history of being a fossil fuel state and being controlled by the fossil fuel industry. We have 7 coal-fired power plants here that have already polluted every single bit of our over 11,000 miles of rivers, lakes, and streams with mercury contamination. We have the nation's only commercial-scale coal gasification plant, which is just really disgusting. Now we have these refineries that are coming up. It's we had a boom in the 80s, an oil boom in the 80s. So what's happening is this long-standing history in North Dakota of being a part of the fossil fuel industry, which is really sad because we were also once known as the breadbasket of the nation. And when you drive out here, we see cornfields and wheat and sunflowers and alfalfa and all that. And so to see the police against that backdrop and doing what they're doing is in large part because of Jack Dalrymple, the governor of this state of North Dakota. We have to be talking to him and saying, what are you doing? Why are you calling in the Army National Guard? Why are you militarizing the police? And having up a big, strong force of men in riot gear against children and women and unarmed people. And then we were really outraged by what happened with Happy and Red Wing because they went into court and their charges were dismissed, and then their charges were increased to felonies, like you said. And so, you know, we started off paying maybe $250 per person for trespassing. It's now up to $2,000 for those bogus felony charges. And we said, well, what do you mean? How is it that they're being charged with this? What do you mean endangerment, criminal endangerment? And they're saying that it's a process by which the police, when they go out and have to cut us off equipment if we lock down, they're physically being endangered. That's how they're speaking to it. But I think people should know that the Red Owl Legal Collective is working on this. It's not something that's just falling to the wayside. It's just that anything in legal proceedings, as I'm sure you know, take a long time. And we're working on building a case. We have footage. We have everything from the social media that we need to build the case. We have all of the statements that come out from our people and how we've been impacted. And so I think it's important for people to understand that we are pushing back against the really horrible, horrific things that are happening, which are calling out the state and showing how oppressive the state of North Dakota has been to Native Americans. It's just that something that people didn't see before. And now with the stand at Standing Rock, people are starting to see what we've been dealing with for decades in the oppression here, as far as media, as far as racism against the police and against our people. It's always, always existed, and now people are seeing it.
We've had there's been some news stories recently where they said that there was a helicopter that was flying out there. There was a helicopter that was flying out there under a false number, and it was checked by the FAA, and they were saying that this plane was being hired by the helicopter was being hired by the Morton County Sheriff's Department or law enforcement of some sort. And they changed their number so that, I remember it said something like they were concerned about threats to people that were helping law enforcement or working on the pipeline issue. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of scrutiny about the way in which law enforcement is behaving or some of the actions that have been taken. People are very concerned about this. First of all, how can people share their concerns? Where should they share their concerns? And then second of all, how can they support the Indigenous Environmental Network and connect to the work that you're doing?
So as far as the police, it's the Morton County Sheriff's Department. So they need to be talked to by as many people as can call them, can write letters to them, to talk about demilitarizing and stepping back. That also has to do again with our governor, Jack Dalrymple, because he's the one who declared the emergency, ordered the state of emergency or emergency declaration was, I think, how he worded it. Mm-hmm. And because of that, that escalated And if they retract that declaration, it can de-escalate. In our trainings on nonviolent direct action, we always teach people about de-escalation for us on the front line, because we're not there to harass or target the police. We're not there to harass or target the workers. We want to stop a pipeline and defend sacred places. And Dakota Access Pipeline Company hired a private security firm, and they had this helicopter on site and ready to go when they knew that they had GPS coordinates for a sacred site that was out there. And we had, you know, ordered a cease and desist for that, and Friday night the site was there, and Saturday morning they came out and bulldozed a 2.2-mile swath, had the helicopter on site so they could film, and had their dogs and guard dogs there. And so it's crazy that none of their strategies worked in their favor. Everything so far has worked against them, because it shows how evil they are. And at first I was surprised with the helicopter stuff, or I was surprised with the police and spraying people in the face and putting gas on women and children. Now I am fully aware that this company will stop at nothing. People need to look at Dakota Access Pipeline Energy Transfer Partners, and they need to tell them that this is no more. And they have to look at the stakeholders, the shareholders, the, you know, Wells Fargo Bank, Citibank, these different funders. Enbridge pulled out of their Sandpiper pipeline funding, and they've invested almost $2 billion into this project. Enbridge needs to be, you know, I guess, targeted. People need to write letters to these CEOs and these corporations. That's, if we can hit them in their pocketbooks, that's where we're going to win. At the end of the day, they don't care about anything but the money. So the police, again, is the Morton County Sheriff's Department. I mean, I don't know what else other than to write letters. And to, we have a legal team. Come out here, contact our legal team, work with us as we strategize around all of these horrible, horrific human rights violations that are happening against women, children, and the men that are out there with us to protect.
So tell me, where can people find your work, and how can they get a hold of you and find out more about what you're doing at the Indigenous Environmental Network?
They can visit us at ienearth.org. We also have indigenousrising.org. Mm-hmm. So my contact information is there. If I don't answer my phone, it's because I have way too much going on with my little three-year-old and other things happening at the camp. We deal with a lot of the internal stuff as well that's happening when, you know, you go from nothing to a community being out on the plains. So people can follow us on our Facebook page, Indigenous Environmental Network, and Sacred Stone Camp is another really good Facebook page to follow. What do you think?
Is that true?
Yes. And I think that just in general, you know, keep following, keep watching, keep supporting, keep asking questions, and keep questioning this quote-unquote authority, because they are not... they are wrong. And the more people that can tell them that they are wrong, that aren't here, the better off we are, because I think they need to see that it's not just here in North Dakota that things are happening, and that it's not just North Dakotans that are seeing it, or even people just at the camp. People need to reach out from near and far. Anybody that's listening in Fargo, write a letter. We have Fargo police out here. We have Grand Forks police out here. They've been taken away from their own communities, where I'm sure they're needed, to come stand out here where they're not needed. Because we are not violent people. We are water protectors with our children. And the police from other communities don't need to be coming here and standing here and wasting taxpayers' dollars and being taken out of their own communities to harass water protectors. So I think it's really important that people do have a voice. Just speak up, write a letter, make a phone call. It only takes a few minutes. And that would be really, really, really helpful if a bunch of people were doing that for us.
Stay tuned to KPPPLP 88.1 Fargo-Moorhead to hear more news updates and interviews from Standing Rock. Thank you for listening. Mani Wachoni, Water is Life.
Away, away, you have been. Unless you go, I will spread my wings.
Thank you, Dave Matthews.